Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We have a guest in studio in hour one of our program, and this is going to be a busy show, too. You're going to learn a good deal of information in this first hour of the show, because this takes us into an area of discussion where we have not gone often on this program. In studio with us is Luke Rosen. Luke is founder of an interesting organization. He is also the head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics, and he has quite an interesting story to share with us, or stories to share with us in the course of our discussion. First of all, Luke, it's nice to have you join us on our program. Welcome to WFAN.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here. I really appreciate you having me on.
We're going to be talking about rare diseases in this hour of our program, and we'll get into specifically talking about a rare disease that your daughter has. But when I say that term, rare diseases, and we were talking about this before we came into the studio today, most people probably don't have a clue as to what rare diseases are. What's the real definition of that term, first of all? And then secondly, in the real world, how common are they?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a rare disease in the U.S. is defined as a disease that affects fewer than 200,000 people. And so we know of about 7,000 different rare diseases. And so, you know, if a rare disease affects 1 in 10 of our population, and but the real, you know, there's possibly many more people affected by a disease that is rare. And so when you add them all together, it's, you know, rare is not really rare. There's a whole community of people that are affected by, that have similar challenges. So, yeah.
So if this is the case, why don't we hear more about them?
That's such a great, you know, part of our job is raising awareness and talking and shouting from the mountaintops about these children, and about, you know, 1 in 2 people affected by rare diseases are children, and by raising awareness and talking about things like, you know, the everyday routine that families affected have, that's how we we get people to think about zebras and not horses.
Okay, and we're going to, this is special significance to that statement that you're going to share with us as we talk to. Let's talk about the situation that has affected your family. Take us through how it is that your daughter came to be diagnosed with this disease.
So my daughter, Susanna, she's 4 now. She'll be 5 coming up. And
when's your birthday?
May. So
early happy birthday to
her. Thank you very much. May 7th. So Susanna, from the time she was born, she had certain challenges and a little bit of a movement disorder, and she wasn't hitting her milestones. And we thought, she was our second kid. So often with your second kid, you're a little bit more patient if there's a health crisis or a health problem that pops up. So, we just thought that Susanna was on her own timeline. And then slowly, we kind of noticed that things were getting a little bit more tricky. So we doctors were stumped for 2 years. And then finally we did, we got this diagnosis that we were told she has this very, very rare non-inherited genetic disorder that at the time we were told that she was, maybe number 15 or 20 in the world that had been identified with this disease. So she was 2 when we found that out.
Hmm. How many or how long a period of time was it that was involved in, I guess, trying to get to the point where you got that diagnosis?
Pretty much right away. It's when you first have that, any kind of instinct, that parental instinct where something's a little off.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to your doctor and then you go to other doctors, it becomes a mission right away to get that answer and to have that exhale thinking, okay, well, at least we got to the root of the problem and we know how to address it. And that's the problem with these rare diseases is that too often the stories don't get told and too often, you don't have a problem to address. So it was right away that my wife and I knew something was wrong and that we knew we had to go after that diagnosis.
And the diagnosis, what exactly were you told?
So we were told that Susanna has a mutation in her KIF1A gene. So that was completely foreign to us when we heard that.
You didn't know what the KIF1A gene was?
We did not. Okay. We did not know that. And, you had, and this is changing, thank goodness now, is that, access to the proper diagnostic testing is becoming more and more available to people. But, even just 2 years ago, it took, in our case, several months to go from getting that test to getting that diagnosis. So when it comes back, and you hear that you have this, you're dealing with this genetic mutation that doesn't, a disease that doesn't even have a name. And, the physicians who tell you those test results give you a, synopsis of the 2 available papers in the world that describe it. So no, yeah, it was completely foreign to us.
2 available papers in the world.
Well, there were 6, but there were 6 available papers in the world that we knew of, but
wow.
we were given 2.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. So you're given this information. Many people might just be completely overwhelmed getting that information. You chose to move in a, for lack of a better term I'm going to use here, proactive fashion. Why and what did you do?
Well, first of all, we were totally overwhelmed when we got that. But yeah, no, it's very true. You get, there are a couple of moments, at least in my life, that I've recognized, you can go one of 2 ways. And we were very lucky to have the support and the encouragement to, when you hear that there's no treatment or no cure,
mm-hmm.
We thought, well, how can that be? And then you realize, well, what do we have to do next? And I remember saying that to our dog. I said, well, how do we fix that? What do we do next? And, the answer is, well, you got to find 100 kids. You got to find a way to build a community so the scientific community and the medical community can get a picture of the disease and see what was going on. So my wife and I started a foundation, and, the goal of starting that foundation was to, to find more people, connect more people, and of course to, raise funds and support to jumpstart some research.
Okay. Now, in your background, you're not someone coming into this with a scientific background, medical background. What had you done before this?
So, up until just after Susanna's diagnosis, I was an actor and a writer, and that all changed. But I was an actor and a writer. Yeah.
Okay, so you start taking the bull by the horns here, starting a foundation. What was that like?
Well, it was a lot different than working on a TV show, but it was completely foreign to us, and I think that was a good thing, because we kind of any playbook about how to go about starting a foundation, there's such an urgency behind trying to accomplish these goals that we were trying to accomplish. So we didn't have, time was as much our enemy as nature. So we had to kind of move fast. So we threw out any kind of playbook. And, it was pretty remarkable. My wife, she's really our anchor in so many ways, but she, we started a website, and we primarily just started that website to get disease education and the available literature in one place, because that was hard to find. And mm-hmm. when you have a disease with no name, that's just, a couple of letters, when your family or when friends ask you what's going on with your kid, and it's a 30-minute bumbling explanation that mm-hmm. I often start crying at in mm-hmm. minute number 5, and I'm incoherent. So I've gotten a little bit better at explaining the science, but we wanted to put all of the available education up on one website. Then I mentioned this before, is that people slowly started getting diagnosed a little bit more with this, and they would reach out and contact us. And one dad, I'll never forget this conversation, called me and said, I saw your website. My son was just diagnosed with this disease. We don't know anything about it. And I said, well, did you read the papers that are out there, the literature? And he said, no, I couldn't afford the $35 it costs to get, access to the paper. I thought, my God, everybody has the right and the, not just the duty, but the right to learn about their disease and their child's disease. And as soon as we understood that that was one of the missing links, that became our mission, is to make sure people were educated as much as possible about what was going on. And that was the impetus to really move forward with that element of our foundation. And when we started connecting more people, it was remarkable.
All right. We're going to talk an awful lot more. We take a pause in our discussion with Luke Rosen. He is founder of KIF1A.org, head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics. We're talking about rare diseases this first hour of our program on The Fan.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We're in a discussion with Luke Rosen on our program on The Fan. Luke is founder of KIF1A.org, head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics. We're talking with him about the topic of rare diseases. And by the way, in the course of this hour, you want to join us in conversation. If you're on point with what we're talking about, you certainly can. 877-337-6666 is our number here at The Fan. A lot of different things going through my mind, but let's go back to what you were talking about before we paused for our update and messages. This idea of the experience with your daughter starting the foundation. So what is a typical day like in your household?
So typical day in my house is there's no such thing as a typical day. it's every morning is different and every day is different. And it's not just because of the physical and health challenges that my daughter Susanna faces and how that affects everybody. It's just the new normal. When you find out this new normal, it's a big learning curve. So typically, I'm up at 4:30. I'm doing foundation work, and I also am in the middle of studying in a bioethics program, and that's primarily online. So mm-hmm. It's my between 4:30 and 6 is my time really. And then the kids wake up. in various states of chaos, and and that's really when the day starts. Getting out of the house is difficult sometimes, you know. And when we finally do, then my son drops him off at school, and sometimes he will join us in dropping Susanna off, where we have physical therapy for the first hour before we leave her, and then I head to work, and my wife heads to work, and then, you know, just like every other parent, we have pickup in the afternoon, and then hopefully home for dinner at night. We're all together, so it's. But then again, you know, you get thrown a curveball where, you know, she might have a seizure, or she might have a fall or something, and all of a sudden the day changes. You're in the emergency room, and everything is different.
So in terms of seizures, how often, how many in the course of a day can she have?
Well, you know, that's one of the things about at least specifically to Susanna's disease is that you don't quite know if she'll sometimes be having these events, and you're not sure what it is, if it's the, you know, just the if it's somehow the course of the disease, if it's a seizure. But she has these moments that we now know are likely seizures, anywhere between, you know, between 5 and 100 times a day. You just can't quite tell. And a lot of it happens at night. So, you know, one of us ends up sleeping with Susanna to make sure everything's okay.
That's got to be, you know, as a parent, that has to be awfully scary. I mean, how do you, I assume over time, you kind of get used to it. It sort of adapt to the fact that this is taking place?
No, you know, I guess you would think so, but no, I'm, at least in our 2-year experience, we never get used to it. I mean, you're never prepared for what happens, because I think this is true for every parent. You're never prepared for being in a moment where you're helpless and don't know what to do with your kid. And so we're constantly in fear that we're going to have one of those moments.
Hmm. So the toll on you and your wife as parents, how do you deal with that?
That's such a hard question to answer, because I don't quite think that, you know, rare disease parents, at least I can speak for ourselves, have the luxury of being able to have that private and one-on-one connection as regularly as we might otherwise. You know, we also have a son who's an extraordinary kid.
He's 7, right?
He's 7,
right.
Going on 40.
You told me that before.
Yeah, I did. It's true. He's got a lot to deal with. He's great. He's a great kid. And so, you know, but having that attention is our primary focus.
And how has he adapted?
Remarkably. And I think that's because, well, I know that's because he's in a situation where what would be, you know, weird or troubling for you know, other kids his age that aren't going through this is commonplace for him. So he's a much more tolerant person, certainly than I was when I was his age. But he's really just a remarkable kid. He looks at people with an indifference and a non-judgment that is a result of living with a sister who has this rare disease.
Mm. And some people will wonder, so let me ask the question, because, again, it's a natural one, and we're having a discussion in which we're trying to learn some information about what it is that this is like for you as a family. You know, you talk about the sense of dealing with this situation on a daily basis. Also, in the real world, we have to ask, if you don't mind, how do you deal with the financial burden of it?
You know, that's a big burden, I think, for all rare disease families. But, you know, I can speak for my family, is that just like every element of disease, it's different every day. I mean, there could be, you know, on any given day we have something between, you know, 10 and even sometimes $100,000 hospital bill or collecting on our desk that we know we'll, you know, resubmit and hopefully it'll get covered. But it's a big burden. I mean, we have this wonderful apartment, and you know, we had to move because it's not accessible, and you know, New York old apartments don't have ramps in front.
Mm-hmm.
And so every little thing is tricky and challenging, and especially, you know, you have to get things for your kids that you're constantly fighting for, which is, you know, services in school, like physical therapy and occupational therapy and, you know, medical equipment. And if you can't get those through the proper avenues, you know, you just have to, you gotta bite the bullet and just buy them. And that's, so it is a big financial burden. And that's one of the things we advocate for too, is because, it's that lack of diagnosis in the beginning. Like for us, it was 2 years. Some people have, you know, we're lucky for 2 years. Some people have go 10 years with, you know, having these unnecessary doctor's appointments and everything that add up.
How do they do it?
I am constantly in, and I meet families affected by rare disease every day, and I'm constantly in awe of the strength of our community. I've met people who've gone 15, 20 longer years without having an answer and having that diagnosis, and that uncertainty is terrifying. It's just terrifying. So I don't know how some people do it.
All right, I asked you this earlier, and I want you to share your response with folks who are listening to us today. In establishing the foundation and in your work, how much of what you're doing and what you want to do is basically providing a support system for parents who are experiencing this?
A huge amount of that. I mean, that because, you know, by providing a support system and by educating people, not just families affected by the rare disease, but, you know, the medical community and the scientific community. And, you know, if you're educating, connecting every single person involved, then you're creating not just a community, but you're creating an awareness of the disease that people don't know about. More people will get diagnosed if there's more awareness about that disease, and it'll trickle down to policymakers, and people will come together. And so that's a huge part of everything, because you can't drive that overall mission to discovering, you know, possible treatment without growing a community. So knowing that that's the anchor and the heart of everything was a very important realization to make. So we started very early to make that connection and connect with people.
I want to talk in a minute about your involvement with Ovid Therapeutics. Let me just mention the fact we're talking with Luke Rosen. He is founder of KIF1A.org and head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics. You can listen to WFAN anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app. I hope you have by now. You can favorite us today. If you have Alexa or Google Home, just say, play WFAN, and you'll be locked in to the fan. This involvement with Ovid Therapeutics, what was it that drove you to them?
So when I was learning about this whole process in rare disease and how to get closer and how to accomplish this mission of possibly finding out a way to develop these treatment, you always hear in the rare disease community, especially in the advocacy group communities, you hear, you know, the next step is to partner with biotech, right? Because that's the team that's going to actually, take the research and development to the next level, which is getting these potential therapies to kids. And so I, you know, at the time I knew of one rare neurological biotech in New York, and that was Ovid Therapeutics. And so I tracked down and I sat down with the CEO, Jeremy Levin, and then the chief medical officer, Amit Rakit, and some other folks. And I realized that, you know, this is a team that's trying to build a community themselves, only build a community that's driven by science and the desire to, you know, an equal desire that's necessary to bring these potential therapies to kids. And you know, there's this ethos in our coursing through the veins of our company, and that's you know, this idea of do no harm and finding out trying to unlock the door to rare neurological disorders and understand disorders of the brain and then actually act and do something about it. So when I met that team, I was lucky enough to be able to join it, and my role at Ovid is a science-driven responsibility to not just advocate for, but educate and keep connecting with the rare disease community. So it was a kind of a natural transition and to learn about that process.
You don't use the term cure, and I said this to you before we started the program, but you use the term you just did of potential therapies.
Mm-hmm.
In talking. Why is it important to take that?
It's important to think about that because with these, and to say that and articulate that, because with these, within these diseases, and again, I can certainly speak, you know, specifically to my own situation, but within these diseases, there are multiple, you know, symptoms or multiple other diseases within this big disease that we don't know about. So it's important to, you know, we think about treating the challenges that are happening within the disease before we can, you know, while we're on the way to discovering something for the entire disease or to address the disease as a whole. And I feel like when there's any hint of something new, the word possibility is a big word to have because we're all really on that mission and you got to think that everything's possible.
We're in a discussion on our program on The Fan with Luke Rosen. He is founder of KIF1A.org, head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics, and he's our guest in this hour of our program. We're talking about this topic of rare diseases, and he shared an awful lot with us in talking about this rare disease that his daughter Susanna is dealing with, too. And, you know, we'll get into talking as well about some of the research studies and the like that are ongoing. And possibly ways that people who are listening to us can get involved and be helpful. And that's as we continue on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
I guess that's as close to a positive comment from Minko as I'm going to get, a positive treat for me. Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We're in discussion with Luke Rosen this first hour of our program, talking with him about this topic of rare diseases. He's the founder of KIF1A.org, head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics, and he's talked with us on our program about this topic. I mentioned earlier, you know, this idea of rare diseases, most people, I assume, don't have a clue about this, but I had mentioned the fact that if, you know, you have a question or thought in this area, you can join us. 877-337-6666 is our number here at The Fan. I want to talk about some of the studies that are going on right now, but I also want to take time to talk about what it is that people who are listening to our discussion today who may be touched by some of the things that you're saying, some of what you're saying may raise some questions for them. Because we get a lot of people in a lot of different areas. You know, it could be a parent, a grandparent, aunt, uncle. It could be somebody who works in the medical field. and some of my colleagues who work in the educational field, people who work in physical therapy and the like. What can people who are desirous of being helpful or supportive, what can they do?
They can talk about it and raise awareness. I think that we've accomplished a great deal if we just get somebody to talk about a rare disease in a conversation, because that's part of the awareness. If you're able to encourage dialogue and create an environment where people can tell their stories, it's so important. So learning about it and reaching out and connecting with the actual community that is affected is just so important. So I would say that if you're inspired to do anything, it's to seek out a family that or an individual that's affected by these diseases and talk to them and try to understand their challenges. Somebody told me in the beginning of all this that it's all about understanding what matters most to the families and how far they're willing to go to get it. And so, we talk about the idea of what is a meaningful change. You hear that a lot, what's truly meaningful. And, I use this example from my own life, and it's that my daughter, Susanna, has a place in the living room that she loves. It's this giant beanbag. It's very comfortable, and it's about 20 feet away from the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And, she's not toilet trained, and a lot of our kids have that challenge and with rare diseases, and she has movement disorder, so she can't walk maybe sometimes 10, 15 feet without falling and maybe hurting herself. But I know that if there was some way we could just get that 5 more feet, maybe she could get to the bathroom, maybe she'd be potty trained, maybe we wouldn't be late going out the door every day that causes anxiety, that causes my son to, it's this spiraling effect. So if you can understand what really matters to families, 5 steps would be transformative. And so I would say, try and understand what really matters to families and join the team and figure out a way to make an impact.
Somebody goes to your website. What sort of things can they learn there?
You can learn about the disease. You can learn the current research that's happening and how to get involved. And, the first thing that when someone reaches out to us and tells us that they've just found out about this diagnosis, the first thing we say is, welcome, you're not alone. You have a community of people that are here to support you, to help, and to share stories. And second, you and your physician need to contact whatever team is doing the relevant research, and that's really important for every single. And this is a big part of what we do is every person and family member affected by this has a very specific and very important role, and to be active in not just your own care, but in the process of furthering the community. Towards the shared mission of finding a possible treatment.
The studies that are ongoing now, can you describe them for us?
Yeah. I mean, there's a process in all of rare disease that seems to be uniform is not right, but it seems to be consistent, and it all starts with connecting and with creating this community. You have things like a natural history study, it's called. And what that is everybody, again, playing an active role and speaking with the researchers and the physicians and talking about their challenges. And so that's a big part of, at least for KIF1A right now, is being part of that study, because you can't drive towards a possible treatment without having that first study. So understanding the disease before you move to the next step is paramount. And so that's one study. And then a big part of things is educating people about the process, how you would do things, like enrolling in or becoming part of that research is important. So, I don't know if that answers the question.
It does. Yeah. And when we talk about exactly where this research is taking place,
So the research for KIF1A is happening at Columbia University with this incredible, incredible team of researchers who are just so supportive and they're part of the community. That's the thing that's remarkable, is that with rare disease, every single different piece of the puzzle. When I say community, I don't just mean the families, right? The researchers, the physicians are all part of this community that care so relentlessly about the kids.
Now, I need to ask you about a couple of other items, too. One, I believe, is it pronounced Angelman's?
Angelman syndrome.
And 935. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I sure can. So at Ovid, we work with multiple rare disease communities, but we work with the Angelman syndrome community and the rare epilepsy community, too. And those are two of the ongoing studies, and also just for my role at Ovid is really engaging with those communities. So, those are two of the rare disease communities that I work very closely with, and just have, I'm in constant amazement about the strength of those families.
And what's the timeline of those studies?
It varies from community to community. So, every single member of our team is working, diligently to get, to get to where we need to go as fast as possible.
Mm. And when we're talking about this approach with research, with studies, sometimes people will hear, the terms genetic testing, okay, and an immediate image forms in their mind. What should we really know about or think about when we hear that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, huge and important element of getting that diagnosis that's so important to families and to understanding the disease, is genetic testing. And it starts, it starts with the family and then in the clinic and trickles all the way down to policy about, how you get access to that testing. Mm-hmm. Because, without access to that testing, it's very hard to get that a diagnosis. And so, what happened, in my experience, just 2 years ago, it took, several months to get that diagnosis. And now it's just with next generation testing, it's getting more and more accessible and faster and faster, and which is why these diseases that we think might be and you hear that some of these diseases are so rare they affect just a small amount of people, but that's not really the case, right? Is that there are likely thousands of people that are affected by these diseases. They just haven't had access to the right testing to understand that and to find that out. So access to genetic testing is just so crucial.
And a companion question to that, because this goes back to something you mentioned earlier in our discussion, paying for that, okay? What do you do if you're told that you need that testing, but your insurance is not going to cover it?
Yeah, so that's also changing with access, is the cost of that test. So the cost of the test, the more we know about it and the more common it becomes, is going down. There's always a way to get the tests you need, and whether it be a foundation, a nonprofit, or every single hospital has an advocacy and social work element to it. So there's always a way. Everybody's entitled to understanding what's going on with their health, and genetic testing is an important piece of that puzzle. And so there's always a way to get that testing. There's always a way to do it. You just have to really work and ask the right questions.
The advice you would have for someone who's newly diagnosed, what's the most important thing you want them to know?
Well, as always, the most important thing is, you know, talk to your physician, because you have to be on the, you know, you have to be as in control as possible about the day-to-day health challenges. So beyond that obvious and essential part of communicating with your doctor is the idea, and I always say, you know, you are not alone. Mm-hmm. That feeling of isolation it can be completely overwhelming and can take a toll on anybody, and just understanding and communicating that to every single rare disease community, that you're not alone. There are people to share your stories with, and there are people that want to listen, and that there's an entire scientific community out there who, once they hear the stories and understand about these diseases, they are likely to move forward and to take it into the lab and to take it into the classroom, and that's how you make progress.
When you think of the future, are you optimistic?
I am optimistic.
Why?
I'm optimistic because of just what we've been talking about, that when a community grows stronger and stronger and stronger, you can accomplish far more than you can if there are fewer people. So it's, you know, several different people coming together to create something far greater than any of us ever could have imagined, but we always hope to imagine. So the larger a community gets, and the more often people within that community tell their stories, we are getting closer and closer and closer to unlocking that mystery of these rare diseases. And so that's what makes me very, very hopeful, is that there are more people joining the team every day and with that, acting with that urgency and that need to collaborate. So it's really the people in the community that make everything teeming with hope and possibility.
Okay, here's your opportunity. I've mentioned it a couple of different times. Invite people listening to us to visit your website.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So please, you know, if you want to learn more about KF1A, you can visit www.kif1a.org. And, you know, if you want to learn about the communities that we build and work with at Ovid Therapeutics, you can visit OvidRx.com. And there are other incredible resources, and you can find all of them on those two websites.
And the other thing I should ask you, too, through that site, can people donate?
Absolutely. There's always you certainly can, and thanks for asking that. People can donate, of course, donating money and finances is always really, really an important piece of the puzzle. Donating skill sets are a huge piece. So, you know, pick up the phone, give an email. There's always a way to help, and we're always so thankful for that help.
Skill sets like what? What are you looking for? What do you need?
Skill sets like people who can help educate and build those communities, and people who can plan events, and people who can help get the words out. But, you know, everybody has that skill set of being able to tell your story. So my one message is reach out and tell your story, because it has great impact.
KIF1, that's the numeral 1A.org. Founder of KIF1A.org, head of patient engagement at Ovid Therapeutics, Luke Rosen, our guest this first hour of our program on The Fan. Luke, thank you very much for joining us. Certainly good luck with your work.
Thank you so much for having me. This means the world to me.
Wonderful discussion. Hopefully some of the folks listening to us can be supportive of your efforts too. And we got a lot more to get to on our program this Sunday morning.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them, and designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.